You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I am your host, Adam Miller, and today we are continuing a series we've been doing as we're working through the Gospels, or actually the Psalms. We've been talking about worship, and one of the leading perspectives in our study on worship has been the glory of God, or the glory of Christ that we can see looking back into the Psalms. And I'm excited to invite as our guest for today, his name is Matt Papa. He is an artist, a recording artist, as well as a worship leader in many regards, and the author of a new book called Look and Live. Behold the soul-thrilling, sin-destroying glory of Christ. Matt, thank you so much for being a part of our program.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about yourself? It's a great book here, a great resource that kind of is almost your testimony in a way. So tell us a little bit about your story that led into this book.
Basically, I grew up in the Bible Belt. I usually say I grew up in the church, but not in a Christian home. I was around church things and people pretty frequently. You know, I got into ministry really, really early on. Like, you know, when I was around 13 or 14, I started helping out with music and the youth group, like a lot of young folks are doing now today, which I think is great. And started doing that. So I started in ministry pretty early on. Just you know, out of college, studying music in college, in my early 20s, I started doing ministry on a pretty fast scale, I guess you could say. I was just very active and sort of out there and singing and doing ministry, and it was great. But one of the things I talk about in the book some is that a lot of that, and you know, obviously still now, I'm not in heaven yet, so I'm still I'm still a mess being fixed. But you know, a lot of that sort of drivenness and energy, even in doing ministry, was driven by pride and driven by selfish ambitions. So a lot of what I try to convey in the book is that an idol can really be anything. It's the thing that gives you energy. It's the thing that gives you identity and purpose. And that thing even can be something good. And oftentimes it is, like religion or ministry or family or career, things like that. And so they're very, very hard to discover. But oftentimes our emotions, you know, one theologian I've heard a pastor say that our emotions are like smoke from the fire of the altar of the true God we worship. And so you trace your emotions down, and you're able to really see, you know, in these sort of visceral moments of life, in these moments where you're just off the cuff reacting. Those are often the times where our idols are exposed, and so if we're not careful or listening to our own hearts, ourselves, we'll miss that. So I hit a point, anyway, my mid-20s, where I found myself extremely tired and depressed and in despair. I because ministry had been such an idol and such a thing that I was using sort of as a place to find my identity. And so God just began to work on me and heal my heart. And the book, a bit of a surprise, I guess, I started working on an album, and it had these themes in it. You know, we write, I guess every writer kind of writes from a place of what is currently inspiring you and what you're currently fascinated by. And so I just started writing. I was writing an album, and I started writing these what I thought would be song devotionals. And it sort of transformed into more than that. So here we are now with the book, and hope it's been helpful to people.
Tell us a little bit about the title. It comes out of your story, your testimony. What does it mean to look and live?
Gosh, there's a whole lot there. The title comes from 2 Corinthians 3:18, which says, "We all with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed from one degree of glory to another." So part of it comes from that. Part of it comes, there's a story in Numbers 21. I talk about this early on in the book. It's a pretty famous story in the Bible where God's people in the wilderness, they start whining and complaining like we do. We're good at that. And God sends serpents. They start biting the people. People start dying. They cry out for mercy. God sends his mercy, and he does it in kind of an interesting way. He tells Moses, hey, take a bronze serpent, hold it up on a pole, and whoever looks at it is gonna live. Obviously, God could have done anything there. He could have just spoken a word and healed everybody. He could have turned the snakes into cute puppies or something. I don't know. But he didn't. He said, I want to do it this way. And we find out, John chapter 3, we find out why he did it that way, because Jesus said, just as Moses lifted the serpent in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that whoever believes in him will have eternal life. And so the book is coming from that, I guess, perspective, as I'm wrestling through some of these issues of identity and worship and idolatry. One of the things I talk about in the book is that worship is not ever something that we begin. It's something that we aim. You know, say that basically, when I wake up in the morning, I don't wake up singing Chris Tomlin songs. I don't wake up sort of just automatically ho-hum drum ready to serve Jesus. Most days I wake up to sort of this undercurrent of noise, of anxiety, of what's going on, what have I got to do today, what's going on with my emails or social media, and so there's this sort of onslaught of emotion and of desire that's sort of just surging. It's just happening, right? And it's sort of an animal, and if we don't tame it, we'll just go out into life sort of hungry and looking for approval from anyone and anything. And so it's C.S. Lewis, he called it, he had a word for it, it's called Sehnsucht, it's a German word, and it's just this, it just means this intense desire to see, this longing to behold. Essentially, we're all beholders, we're all people who are fascinated with something, over something. You know, essentially, if that something isn't God, we're going to end up brokenhearted, we're going to end up confused, we're going to end up disillusioned. You know, life is a constant struggle of that. And so the way to tame the search and the hunt and the hunger for glory is to lift your eyes to Jesus, to look and live. So in the morning, you wake up and the fight begins to redirect your focus from the world, which is where it is sort of automatically. And you put it back on Jesus. And it's a lifelong journey. It's a lifelong practice. It's a lifelong habit, the means of grace that God has given us, prayer, Bible study, community, involvement in local church, all these things are ways that we lift our eyes above the world. And obviously, it in a sense, it's salvation. It happens once for all, but also we're, for the rest of our lives, we're learning how to do it. So.
Now, as a worship leader, as somebody who writes the music and even performs and puts these into albums, have you found within the medium there is a great gift to guide and shepherd people and to guide their hearts in a memorable way to come back to these biblical truths? But there's also that ability to become distracted and become fully engulfed in music as an art form and to miss that story. How do you balance that as you're trying to communicate something deeper that is trying to draw our attention in this book, looking to Jesus in that regard?
Yeah. So that's a really interesting question. There's a whole lot in what you're saying. You know, in one sense, I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, as it were, and say that music is sort of not a good gift of God, right? Because everything God made is good. And it's just that, like what you're saying, which is spot on, nothing in this world is enough. It, you know, like Augustine, I think I had this in chapter 2, maybe at the end of chapter 2 or 3, but he has this awesome quote where he talks about, you know, I went to the trees. I asked them, are you my maker? And they said, no. I went to the mountains. I looked to the stars. I asked, are you my maker? And they all resoundingly said, no, we are not him. We point to him. And so music, I just say all that to say, music is a good gift of God, but in and of itself, it doesn't get us there. And so, as it relates to corporate worship and music that, you know, that is about Jesus and focuses on him and specifically, you know, is utilized in the church, the goal, the idea, I think, is that the music would adorn the truth, and it would highlight it. You know, and one of the things about this, the idea of behold, that word that's in 2 Corinthians 3:18 and also in the title of the book, is, you know, beholding is more than looking, right? You look at your computer screen, or you look at your iPhone screen, but you behold a sunset or a Rembrandt. You know, it's marinating. It's not just tasting. And so one of the ways that music is a gift, specifically in the church and for ministry, is that you are taking an aspect of God, of who He is, of what He's done, and you're beholding that. You're turning it over. There's a verse, Hebrews 12:3, I believe it is. You know, it's after the famous one, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author, finisher of our faith, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross. And the next verse, it says, consider Him who endured such hostility by sinners against Himself, so that you will not grow weary or lose heart. That word, consider Him, in the original language, it has this picture of what, you know, a jeweler who holds up a diamond to consider its worth and its value. It has that sort of connotation with the word in the original language. And so, really, with the glory of God, you have all these facets and aspects of who He is and what He's done. And one of the things that we do in music and in songs is that we're able to just take one, you know, just one little facet, and we're able to just stare at it and, you know, and just gaze at it and look at it and shine on it and reflect on it. And then, you know, and then you have another song and you go to the next facet and you know, and that's what we're going to be doing for all eternity. You know, we're going to be turning that diamond over and over and over and just endlessly being in awe. And so that, you know, music is an amazing gift for that purpose, to help us behold. And that really, you know, that really goes not just for Christian music, but for any sort of music. You know, you're looking at the wonder of who God is, or the wonder of the world that God has created, and you're just, you know, becoming more keenly aware of it. And so that's one of the reasons music is an awesome gift.
Now, you write about look and live in a way that really it goes into the face of what is practical for most people and how they approach the situations, the problems that they're facing in their life. We want help in a certain circumstance. We want to know 5 steps to get out of this. And this flies in the face of conventionalism, in the sense of that looking to Jesus is really the answer to those questions, is the answer to those concerns, correct?
Yeah. I do try a little bit to hit, you know, I share like, you know, different stories throughout the book and different things like that. And I share a bit of practical sort of, you know, helps. But yeah, generally, the concept of the book is it's on this idea of worship and idolatry, that and those are very sort of ethereal concepts, but they are concepts that are at the bottom. They're surging, they're coursing at the root of our lives, and everything else is sort of an upshot up from them. How we spend our money, how we spend our time, how we treat other people, how we react in certain circumstances, all of that, it's all coming from what we love, from what we desire, and we can't control it. It's just happening. So that's why I wrote the book, really, is because I was discovering for myself, my own life, obsessions that weren't God. And I was coming more and more to the end of myself, and this, with the great commandment, you know, it says, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. I used to think that I could do that. And I slowly am finding out, the more I live, that I can't do that and I don't do that. But God did that in Jesus for me. He loved me when I did not love Him. And so love is a response, and that's what beholding, that's what worship really is about, and what I try to talk about in the book, is that worship is a response to God's initiative. It's not first and foremost our initiative. When we find ourselves living on our own initiative, in our own power, even when we're sort of doing good things and good deeds, we're going to end up doing those things out of motivations that aren't love. They're either driven by fear or pride. But worship, you know, it's response-oriented, and so we see who God is, we see what he's done for us, and that changes everything. We look first. I think somewhere in the book I say so the Christian message is not behave, it's behold. And that's really a huge fundamental shift in our thinking, in how we live, and it changes everything about our lives. And so it is a concept that it's rather foundational and hard to get to the bottom of, but I try my best to help me and help people get there.
It's interesting that Psalm 50 says, if I were hungry, would I come to you? And I think sometimes we think of worship in that regard, that we are giving God what he requires of us, but that's not what God hungers for. That's not what God requires for us to do. Is he wants us to love him. He wants us to desire him, to seek after him, it's the irony. We want to make sacrifices to God, but it's God who wants to make sacrifices for us. And that's difficult to wrap our mind around, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's part of, I think it's just part of the journey, you know. And I think that our motivations for serving God and doing good things and, you know, even, you know, reading the Bible and praying, and you know, that's one of the things I try to talk about in the book, is that even Bible study and prayer, things that as elemental as that, as good as that, can fuel our idolatry. Our motivations can be totally out of whack. I talk about my own testimony and realization of looking at my prayer journal, and you know, I ask myself the question and people the question, that if the world could read your prayer journal, would God look more like a genie or a treasure? And you know, if I'm honest, like, I am coming to God, my natural sort of inclination in prayer is to come to God and not to first say, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. And my first inclination isn't worship. My first inclination is, God, I've got these things in my life that I really need, these circumstances that really need repairing and mended, and I need them to be fixed. I need this idol. Essentially, I'm asking God, please give me my idols. And so even our prayer, we can be sort of fleshing out or seeing or beholding, if you will, an idol that we're... And so Jesus, he turns prayer on its head when he says, this is how you should pray. Start with, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Why do you do that? He didn't say start with, give me my daily bread or you know, these practical things, because he knows the heart, and he knows that we wake up sort of scurrying and busy to find identity in things that God has made rather than God himself. And so you say, no, hold on. Pray first, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Reorient your heart and your life around what is most important and what matters. And so I just say that to say, our whole lives, we're going to be continually learning and growing in the truth that, you know, our circumstances can't heal us. A better circumstance, a better lot in life, it doesn't matter a bit. And you know, we, our contentment is in Jesus. Our happiness is in Jesus. Our hope is in Jesus. And you know, in serving Him, our motivations are going to be shot through with all kinds of mixed motivations and things for self-serving and orienting around ourselves and our own desires. We just need grace, and God has so much of it, and He gives it to us, and we learn, and we grow, and we continue to be. You know, and we go through suffering, we go through hard times. Suffering is one of the biggest places God exposes our hearts and says, this is really what you love, because, you know, that's the essence of where we hurt, is when our idol is something gets taken from us. And so I'm trying my best in the book to help people listen to their hearts, help people hear or see what's going on down there, and what you do actually desire, and what you do love, and to hopefully get to the end, get to the place where you say, wow, God, I need you. I need help. I need grace.
We are made as worshipers. I think that you kind of emphasize this a lot in your book. By nature, we're worshipers, but it's a matter of what we are worshiping. In one regard, redirect and stop worshiping God when we start, when our hearts are really drawn to worship another thing, correct? We are in generally giving ourselves up or giving ourselves away in a lot of ways to whatever is most important to us.
Yeah, that's right. There's an author, his name's Harold Best. He said it well. He said, when we sin, worship doesn't stop. It changes direction. Another David Powell Wilson, he's a counselor, he said, we worship our way into sin. We must worship our way out. You know, you can look through the Ten Commandments and kind of see that. So if you say, you look at the commandment of lying, thou shalt not lie. Worship is underneath that. You know, the commandments start with, you shall have no other gods before me. That's okay. We say that's worship. And then it ends with, you shall not covet, which means to want something too much, which means to worship. And so we kind of can see that, all right, that's worship. But how do the others fall into worship? Well, okay, if you take lying, thou shalt not lie or bear false witness. Well, why, I just ask myself, if I lie, when I have lied, it has typically been because I'm worshiping the approval of another person. So I want to appear smarter or more together or more holy or whatever in front of a human being, in front of another person. And so because I have that idol there, that's why I tell the lie. Or, you know, another practical example, I think I mentioned this in the book, but the commandment to honor the Sabbath, right? And what an awesome God. He says, you know, once a week, don't work. It's a great thing. But for a lot of my life, I didn't practice Sabbath because I was just so busy with activity. And the thought of taking one day a week and just seeking God, just resting, was silly to me. And that's because there's a worship problem, right? There's a worship that, you know, I was worshiping success or the approval of others. And so those things that's in all of our sin and in all of our addiction and all of our struggle, it's worship that's happening underneath. We are beholding the glory of something. And so the idea, what salvation is, it's lifting our eyes, it's learning every day to lift our eyes, to let our eyes adjust, is one of the chapter titles of the book, to the glory of Jesus. It's that's what sanctification is. It's letting our eyes adjust. It's looking and it's learning to look in the context of community, in the spiritual disciplines, of getting on the better diet, of learning to desire things that are really good.
It's I think it was Tim Keller, who wrote the book Counterfeit Gods, who talks about just loving things out of order and the reality that we often are drawn to the you know, counterfeit aspects of something that is far more beautiful. We prefer the synthetic versions of what is organically more beautiful. Our hearts are drawn to worship God, but so often we are distracted to things that are more immediate and closer within our range of feeling. Our vision is very nearsighted in that regard. And I think that's what you're saying here when we talk about looking to Jesus and finding that will put to death all of these idols in our life, correct?
Yeah. Totally well said. And I think part of that stems from just the culture at large. We live in a really fast-paced culture, technologically driven culture. And so we're not very good at transcendence or mystery or things that take time. We're good at entertainment and you know, I don't want to sound like a prig, but you know, because I think there's a place for those things, and I think Christianity is exciting, and I think God, you know, He loves to see His kids have fun, but I think in terms of a whole of where if you use the metaphor of diet and the constant diet that we feed ourselves as a culture, generally it is it's sort of candy coated, fast paced, entertainment driven rather than what is slower, what's good, true, and beautiful, and takes time. And so I think it's a cultural problem at large. We have a hard time sitting still, being still, being quiet. And one of the, I think Thomas Aquinas, he said, most of our problems in life come from we can't sit still, quiet in our room for 20 minutes. And there's something to that, because I think if we could, George Mueller, he was a pastor, orphanage builder, he said, the first business to which I ought to attend every day is to have my soul happy in the Lord. And he was talking about how, when he would go out and he would do his orphanage work, if he didn't get his soul, quote, happy in the Lord, that he would go out in the wrong spirit and in the wrong mindset. And, that's just so right on. I mean, spot on with life and with my reality, at least. And so, the slowness of looking to Jesus, good, true, beautiful, taking that time is so hard in the context of the culture we live in, but so crucial.
Now, you are an artist, a musician, a writer, and in those ways, your primary way of communicating to people is through song, which I think you describe as a sermon that's more memorable. So what is it that drove you to write a book and to communicate in this venue?
The book was a bit of a surprise. I was working on an album. I think I knew the album was going to be called Look and Live. I think God created us like sort of filters, and we sort of go through life with certain, in seasons we have certain fascinations, and generally over the course of our lives, we'll probably only have 2 to 3 different fascinations that we just sort of go back to over and over. But this, in this season, it was this concept of glory, worship, idolatry, Look and Live. And so I was making this album, the song sort of had that theme, and I thought, well, I want to kind of expound on that a little bit. And I started writing these devotionals, song devotionals, and I just felt like I just wanted to say more, I wanted to write more. So to be honest, I didn't plan to write a book, and I just started to write, and I kept going. And it was a very interesting process. I when I started, I was very having mostly written songs, I was going very slowly, because with a song, you only have like, I don't know, maybe 100 words per song, and so you kind of agonize over each one. And with the book, I was trying to do that, and it was taking a bit too long. So I started with a different kind of medium. Started to kind of change gears a little bit. So yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, but it seems like it's helped people. I hope it will continue to.
Now, as somebody who is seeking to put their story on their sleeve, their emotions on their sleeve, what is it you want to communicate to your readers, to your listeners, to our audience who are hearing your story, hearing your testimony?
I think listen to. Listen to your heart, listen to, your emotions and what they're telling you about what you love. Listen to your despair, listen to your anxiety, listen to your anger, and trace those things down into seeing what you desire and what you love. And then, confess that to God and deal with it there. Confess it to a brother, confess it to a sister, and say, this came up, this thing happened, or I'm going through this struggle in my life. There's really nothing more ultimate than what it is we worship, and there's nothing more eternally orienting than what is it we worship, what is it we love. And so I'm just... because it's almost given for a Christian, you say, I worship God. I love Jesus. I just want to test myself in that. I want to test you in that. And I say, all right, well, do we really love God? Because, you know, it's the greatest commandment. It's the hardest thing in the world. And actually, it's impossible. And it's impossible to love God apart from His Spirit, apart from Him loving us first, and apart from, it's what 2 Corinthians 3:18 actually, it ends with the phrase, we go from glory to glory, beholding the glory of God, and this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. That verse, you know, it just tells us that, you know, this is a work of the Holy Spirit. He does it. He transforms us. He changes us into people who aren't obsessed with the world, overly fascinated with the world, but who are fascinated with Him. And you know, I don't know if you're listening and your circumstances are bare. You feel like you're in a desert. You feel like you're confused. You're drowning. I would just encourage you to, you know, I think about Psalm 63. David said, "Oh God, you're my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water." Even though David was in a desert, he was literally in a desert in that moment. He did not have a desert in his heart because David's first love was God. And so I think, if you're finding you're in a place circumstantially that you're just so disillusioned, dissatisfied, that is a call from God, a moment for you to say, to echo the words of C.S. Lewis, if I find in myself a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, maybe I was made for another world. And, you know that you are, and I know that I am. But it's every day reminding ourselves of that and saying no reorienting of circumstances is going to work. It's not going to work. It's not about what's around me. It's about what's inside me that makes me happy, that makes me satisfied.
We've been talking with Matt Papa, who is the author of the book Look and Live, Behold the Soul-Thrilling, Sin-Destroying Glory of Christ. Matt, thank you so much for being a part of our program, for talking to us a little bit about really your story, some of your music, as well as this book as a great resource to get our eyes fixed on Jesus.
Man, thanks for having me. Hope it was helpful.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.